Hello and welcome, everyone. I'm Morgan Klein, full-time mom, personal trainer, co-founder, and COO of Burn Bootcamp. I'm here to bring you a strong dose of hot topics such as nutrition, fitness, self-help, style, entrepreneurship, motherhood, and so much more. I strive to inspire you to live your life with greater balance, vitality, and empowerment. So grab a mug and join me for a cup of coffee and kettlebells. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Kettlebells. This episode is for all of you new and expecting mothers out there. But hey, if you aren't one of those two, I know there will be valuable information in this episode and you won't want to miss it. So don't stop me too short. Before we move on and I talk to you guys about our guest today, I just want to make sure that you've subscribed to this podcast so you never miss an episode. When you subscribe, you will get a notification every time I upload a new one. Guys, without further ado, today I have on the podcast Stephanie Middleberg. She is a best-selling author of The Big Book of Organic Baby Food, as well as The Big Book of Organic Toddler Food. So if you listen to episode 101, all about baby-led weaning, and that was not right for you or your baby, Stephanie is here to share with us another route we can take, you know, to ensure that we are feeding them the best foods possible. Then Stephanie will also dive into the foods we should be focusing on feeding our toddlers, which I can't wait to find out more about because as you guys know in my solo podcast that I just did, I have a very picky eater. My toddler's very picky. So I'm excited to hear what she says. Welcome to the podcast, Stephanie.
Hi, thank you. Happy to be chatting with you.
So both of your books are focused on organic foods. So let's talk a little bit about why it's so important for us to feed our children with organic foods.
It's amazing that what seems like it used to be a trend is definitely here to stay. And that what's the good news with organic is that you can find it everywhere, most places that you go. But I mean, the most important thing is that like we all want the best for our little ones. And we know that they have they're developing their organs and their brain function. Mm-hmm. And so organic food is just made without pesticides and GMOs. So in terms of that, you know, we're decreasing their load of that. But we also have more and more research is pointing that organic foods also have more nutrition to them, which is great. So in certain cases, it could have more omegas, it can have more vitamin D. So more and more research is pointing to that. So it's the combination of just less pesticides as well as higher nutrition quality and absorption for the kids.
Mm-hmm. And so talk to us a little bit about if we're doing non-organic foods, how that can really affect our kids later in life. You know, is there health issues that they can come to when they get a certain age? Or talk to us a little bit about the risks of non-organic foods.
It's one of those things that's going to be continuously in the news and continues to be studied in terms of what happens to them later on in life. What we know now is 1 out of 2 kids has some form of AIE, which is autism, ADHD, allergies, anxiety is a new one. So organic foods can, and just healthy eating in general, which I know we're going to get to later, can really help, is one step that we can do to help prevent some of these in the immediacy of the kids in terms of also some potentially some sensitive lungs. So more and more research is coming out with that. There's so much in terms of in the environment. It's not just the food we eat. It's obviously the water that we drink, what's in the air, it's plastics and supplements that we take and vitamins and medications. So food is one thing I know that at least we can control a little bit. And with the organic is what I say is control the controllables. So when you're buying it or cooking it at home, if you have the ability to do as much organic as possible, that's always great. But then obviously when you're outside the home, it's not always easy to get. If you're at birthday parties, you're at friends' homes, you're at restaurants, don't stress about it.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about, like, obviously people have to also adhere to some sort of a budget, right, for food.
Exactly.
And organic food
exactly.
is going to be a little bit more. So
yeah.
What are some hacks that you've learned along the way that, like, I was actually talking to somebody else about this on the podcast. I remember I used to always do like the clean 15 or dirty dozen,
the
clean
dirty
15.
Dozen.
What are your thoughts on that? Because obviously, if it's absolutely okay to buy non-organic, that's a way for us to save some money, put that money towards the organic foods. So where are some of those guidelines that you recommend?
Yeah, the Environmental Working Group is such an amazing resource for parents. So they have a list, just what you said, of the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. So the Dirty Dozen, it's a list of fresh produce that has the most pesticides, and those that are cleaner that you don't necessarily need to, it's not as important to buy organic. Mm-hmm. And they change it every year. So that's just one great resource. I also say the foods that you're buying for your family every day. So for example, if you're buying apples, you know, or your little ones love apples, then I would say try and buy that organic. Mm-hmm. If it's something that they're consuming every right. single day, I think that's important as mm-hmm. well. I'm a big fan of doing what's in season and local. So if you do have access, you're near a farmer's market, I think that that's going to be really, really important, even if it's not organic, because at least you know that it mm-hmm. the food hasn't traveled far, and it's very going to be nutrient dense foods. Just to loop back to the Environmental Working Group, they also have like amazing guides for products, for skincare, for sunscreen, lotions, and they have like the highest standards of third party that I've seen. So they're just in general, some of their other guides, non-food related, are wonderful. Yeah,
that's true. They have that app, right, where you can like scan the barcode and it will tell you like the score. I know I've used that before.
It's great. You know, and they're trying to empower, because I think there's so much scary stuff out there. So they're trying to give you tools to like, here's what you can choose versus all the no-no-nos that I mm-hmm. think are going to be really important. I also think it's really worthwhile getting organic frozen produce to help with the budget. There's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with frozen food. In fact, it can actually be healthier, because as soon as the vegetables or fruits are harvested, they're flash frozen. So a lot of the nutrition is retained. Mm-hmm. So it could have even more nutrition than organic foods that are sitting on the shelf.
Yeah.
So I think keeping, you know, frozen broccoli, edamame, corn, peas, whatever it is that your family likes is going to be really important. Organics beyond produce, if eggs is something that your family has all the time, it is for me worth getting organic. Pasture raised is very important. And that's, you can see the yolks are really, really yellow. So it does have more omegas. It does have some more vitamin D in it. And I feel like that's because oftentimes kids eat a lot of eggs, and it's an easy, accessible protein for a lot of kids. So I feel like that's a good place to get it in as well. Mm-hmm. But definitely the Environmental Working Group, looking at their Dirty Dozen and utilizing some of the frozen produce. And then meal planning also for everything else helps, because I know that we tend to buy a lot of stuff and a lot goes to waste. Mm-hmm. So the more that we know that we're getting, I mean, with kids in general, there's just going to be a lot of wasted food, which I know can be so frustrating for so many moms. Mm-hmm. But the best we can do to meal plan and just get the foods that we know that we're going to consume for the week, the better off that we're going to be. Mm-hmm. But I'm more concerned with parents and families getting fruits and vegetables, put them on the plate, even if they are non-organic. I'd rather you not skip it and then choose an organic chip. That completely, to me, defeats the purpose.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So let's talk about like food and kind of what that looks like. Let's start first with baby phase. You know, at what age would you say is the best for them to switch to starting to eat those foods? I know obviously if you're breastfeeding, like it kind of all is different probably depending on if you're breastfeeding or not, or what's that guideline look like?
Academy of Pediatrics recommends around 6 months, and your pediatrician will probably recommend anywhere from 4 to 6 months. In terms of starting solids, starting purees, I think it really is dependent on your child in terms of signs of readiness. I typically think 4 months is a little young, but again, it really just depends. I started my first, who's 4, around 5 months, because he was like a hungry guy. And then my daughter around 5.5 months. And they both literally would start to steal food from my hands, like grab it.
They were ready.
They were ready and put it in their mouth. They were extremely curious. They could sit up, which is important, right? They had they had good strength in their necks. I think that's most important. Those to me are like the two best signs of readiness.
Start. Yeah.
Yeah. Of really when to start. And like, you know, you don't want to go past 6 months because you want to be able developmentally for them to start to be able to handle the food.
Okay. So at 6 months, what would you recommend the best foods to start them off with? I know it should be just like a single ingredient, right? Like you should always introduce different foods kind of separately. Just is that for a food allergy reason or what's the methodology behind that?
Yeah. It's really for a food allergy. You just want to make sure that they can tolerate the specific foods. Once you do that, the single ingredients, honestly, for a few weeks, then you can start to group it together pretty quickly. I know it's like the setup is so exciting. And I remember, I mean, even as a registered dietitian, my husband and I were so nervous and still a little confused about how to feed our baby. We would honestly, we did avocado puree, which I think is a great first food for both my kids. I had a jar of baby food that we bought and we like honestly would mix the avocado puree to the exact consistency of what that jar food was. I mean, we were just such nervous parents the first time
for it to be exactly right.
But you want the texture to be smooth, watery, and thin. And you could mix it if you want. You could do the food alone, or some parents like to mix it with like a little breast milk in there, just for acceptance of taste, or a little formula if you want. And it's really in the beginning, you're just doing a few teaspoons. So the start is really not so much, yes, it's a little bit about nutrition, but they're still getting so much from their milk. So at this point, it's really for having fun, experimentation. Let them explore the spoon, put the food on their tray, and let them get messy. Let them have fun with it. So know that food is fun. I think that's such a huge component of the early developmental stage and playing with food and let them be curious. But I do think also giving them the spoon, because what we want, and you'd mentioned baby-led weaning, what we want is for them to have some sort of independence with the food. So we're just not necessarily always spoon feeding them.
Got it. Yeah, I know for me that was tough because of the mess that it makes, right? But like I also knew it was important to allow them to explore the food, and like I couldn't always clean up their mouth after every bite. And that is actually one of the tips that my guest talked about too, with even baby-led weaning. Like you got to let them get messy, like just plan on not, you know, wiping up until the very end, because they do need to like obviously be able to play with their food and understand all the different senses and touches of it.
Yes, exactly. It becomes a genuine mess, but you know, in the best, we would just strip my kids in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yep. That would become the most.
If you have dogs, then you have your cleanup crew right there.
Yeah, exactly.
I know my dogs gained a couple of pounds every time I'd introduce food to my kids, and the vet would be like, all right, no more snacks.
That's a telltale. Yeah. So the foods, so single ingredients, and I like avocado because it's more of a savory option. And obviously you're getting some good healthy fat there. But then I love sweet potato. I love carrots is a great one. And then obviously you can do some of the fruits like apples and pears and things of that nature. And I like to do it at a time in the morning when they're not too starving. So say they've had their milk in the morning, and then maybe right before nap or right after nap. So they're not too exhausted. They're not too starving where you experiment. You try and get that window where they're like in a good mood in that morning time. And I like doing it in the morning because in case there is a sensitivity or there is an allergy, you could call your doctor, you could get to the doctor's office. So I say always do the top allergens and experimentation in the morning, the best you can.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, before we move on to like 6 to 8 months, kind of that next phase, let's talk a little bit about buying the baby food in a jar, whether it's organic or not, versus making it yourself. Because I know you've kind of touched on like your first child, you had the jar food. Tell us a little bit about your philosophy there and why it's important to, you know, make food versus buying it at the store. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. First and foremost, the taste. If you've ever tasted making your own puree of carrots versus in the jar, it is such a different taste. It tastes so much better when it's fresh, right? And so part of introducing solids for our kids, and the emphasis is that we do want to excite their senses and get them wanting them to enjoy food and give them a palate, an adventurous palate. So the tastes can be so much superior than the jar. Although I will have to say, and we can touch on it, there's a lot, there's so many better brands out there now that there were even 2 years ago. So this whole area is exploding of ways that you can even supplement. So the taste is superior. And then the second part is, more than anything, you know exactly what's in the food that you're cooking it. So even if you are keen on getting organic, you know all the ingredients, you know all the spices and herbs you're putting into it. I think what's in question with previously a lot of the baby food companies was when they tested it, you just didn't know exactly what they said was in it. Was there some more added ingredients? Was there some more lead involved in these jars?
So, and even in organic.
Even in organic, wow. 100%. Yeah. So there's more comfort in knowing that you know what it is. And then if you do cook in bulk, it actually can be cost effective, and it can save you time, because what I just used to do is I would cook everything just in a Vitamix and then freeze it in, you know, a Beba container, an OXO container in the freezer, and just have a lot of these, just all these cubes ready to go that I would just heat up for the week. So if you're able to cook in bulk, it could be a good time.
That was what I was actually going to ask you too, because obviously as a busy mom, like I can think like, okay, I don't have time to like do that as needed. So when you do freeze it, does it lose any of its nutritional value and then like go to reheat it up? Or is there any kind of tips you have on that for like reheating just to make sure we don't lose the nutrients?
It's absolutely fine. So as I said, like you would put it into those like little 2 ounce, 4 ounce containers. Like I guess said, Beba and OXO are great to put them in. And then you can transfer them into a Ziploc bag or into the silicone bags. If you want to do that. And then when you reheat it, I love to reheat it just with some fat. I feel like that always really works. So ultimately I would put it with some ghee or some butter or some avocado oil for them to get some of the fat and for the essential fatty acids for them to help. It helps even absorb. It's good for brain development and also helps them absorb the food. So I would just keep it out on the counter, not for a very short time when you're ready to.
Yeah. Kind of like breast milk too, you know, when you're freezing that. So, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So let's move on to kind of that next phase.
And then I would just make make sure you label it with the date.
Yeah. Okay. And is there a time frame? Like I remember with breastfeeding, it was always like certain times that you could freeze it until it was no longer good.
Yeah. I mean, I recommend like a 3 month window.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to that next phase, kind of that 6 to 8 months. So you've introduced them to that single ingredient. Now let's talk about mixing up different ingredients together in a puree. What's your favorite combinations and why is that important?
Okay. So this is where flavor it up. So this is the time to add some ginger, some cinnamon, even some cumin and carrots is one of my favorites. I love adding leeks to purees. So one of my favorite was a white bean and leek combination. It almost tastes like a hummus, but I would saute the leeks and then I would just blend it with white beans. That just became like an easy one. But again, I love a cumin and carrot. I love a ginger and carrot. I mean, even just one of a simpler one was avocado and banana. I feel like that just was always such a big, big hit with both kids and adults alike. But this is where you can also add some more like leafy green veggies. So I loved doing like a Swiss chard, cherry and tofu. I know it sounds weird, but that actually works really well. Broccoli and potato. I think potato is a nice base, especially when you're adding some other stuff. So for example, when I would do fish, I would always add it with some, in the beginnings, doing it some white fish with some sweet potato. I feel like that was always.
Now with the fish, really would you nice puree couple. That or was it in just like small? Okay.
Well, here's my philosophy with it. Baby led weaning and giving pieces of food or doing purees, they don't need to be so separate. It's nice to be able to give your kids a combination. So what I would always do is I would puree it and as well give my baby pieces of it that they could play with.
Yeah.
So it doesn't need to be so binary. I think you don't have to commit to one way. And different babies need different amounts of food and have different desires. My little one, I wrote this book of organic baby food that was about purees and things, and she just refused the purees and just wanted whole foods. Like, that's awesome. we went with it. But obviously, as she got that was at 6 months. And as she got a little older, though, she started to enjoy the purees on the side. So I would say whitefish is super flaky, but you could do it in both ways. Same thing with sweet potatoes. You can give chunks, and then you could also put it into a puree. Avocado is an easy one. And gagging is normal. It's really, really scary for parents, I understand. But gagging is a way that they learn, and it's part of the development. So that's just the biggest hump, that when you are changing consistencies or with doing the whole food, I think that is the biggest fear of the parents,
yeah,
which I understand. Mm-hmm. But I said, either way that you're doing it, I think the most important is that they're just going to become independent eaters.
Yeah.
So again, I know even with my son, we would do some more, and I'm at the office 4 days a week. So I'm not the one that's feeding him all the time. So we have a nanny, my in-laws, my mm-hmm. parents would spoon feed him all the time.
My mom does the same. She just she loves to just spoil my kids. And I'm like, mom, please let them eat themselves. But she likes to spoon feed them.
Yeah. And so it's pretty amazing just to see, you know, you see those like kids later on. And I would say with my son, we definitely like, he still to this day wants to be fed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where my daughter, she from day one would not let us put a spoon in her mouth and mm-hmm. just wants to eat independently. So part of the bonus of the baby led weaning was that they're able to choose what foods they want. They're in control of that, but you can easily do that with the purees as well, as having them rotate the different spoons that they're putting it into their mouth.
Yeah.
And they're signaling when they're done.
Mm-hmm. My son signals by throwing everything onto the ground. So that's lovely.
Yeah. How old's your son?
He'll be 2 in December. So he's about 21 months right now, 22 months. But that's always, again, I'm thankful for my dogs in moments like that. Okay, so let's move on.
As long as we don't react to it. I mean, I think that's the hardest.
I think at this point, he's definitely doing it for attention, because then he still wants more food. So he's just done with that particular food. He's just developing that personality.
Yep. They all go through that.
So one question I have before we move on to 9 to 12 months is, I think I remember reading this somewhere and I just love your thoughts on it. When it comes to like sweet foods versus like savory foods. Yeah. So like thinking vegetables versus fruits. And I think I remember reading, offer them the vegetables first, because if they get the fruits first, like that's obviously sweeter and they'll eat more of that. So talk to us. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely want to set up so much of the baby food that was in the pouches that are on the shelves are really more sweet based. So they do have some vegetables, but it's really the vegetables, like the second or third ingredient. And it's definitely, and part of it has to do with a pH balance. Like you need the acidity which I've learned about these products. So in order for it to not have bacteria, you need a certain amount of pH. So some of it is based on just the mechanism of making the food mm-hmm. that it can be shelf stable. So there was so much emphasis on like what they're having is very sweet. But we do want to try and give them some more savory options, like the vegetables as best we can. But having them have more fruit purees doesn't necessarily set them up to have an out of control sweet tooth when they're older. There's mm-hmm. so much. We're going to do the best that we can to always have some vegetables on their plate, prep it in different ways so that they're always going to want that. But kids are just like adults. They are going to want to, they crave sweet stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think just as they get older, as you know, like they get into school, they have school snacks, they have parties, they have play dates with their friends, or you're just going to be they're exposed to more and more foods. So I know the concern with sugar for parents is really strong. So they think that's like a big fear, that we're going to have these kids that are sugar addicts mm-hmm. or are going to be addicted to sugar. And that's honestly, it's hard to do, but we know the negatives of too much sugar on our kids, but I think we just need to find a balance that they're able to modulate their sugar intake in the environment. We want to raise a kid that when faced with sugar, they obviously don't rebel and go crazy.
Right.
I mean, this is a larger discussion about sugar, mm-hmm. Sugar in general. So it's perfectly fine to give some of the fruit purees. I just like to mix it with some more of the vegetable. So making an effort just to keep that in the mix, even if the kids refuse it, keep putting it on their plate. You keep hearing it, it could take up to 20 times for them to want it. So just keep, so they keep recognizing it on their plate. With the vegetables, you can always, like, even as they get older, keep some crudité and some dips out for them. So they just see it on the table, they might grab it. I mean, that could be some more of a conversation we can talk about for some picky eating.
Yeah.
So my answer is yes and no. I wouldn't be too concerned that, like, oh my God, my baby just gravitates towards the few fruit purees and that we're doomed and he's only going to want sweets. Things shift all the time as they're exposed to different things. And it's how we react with the kids and our language about food that later on really, I think, plays an important role in their sugar consumption.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so let's talk about the next phase here. I know you kind of like 9 to 12 months is when you believe we should start having more chunkier purees. So let's talk about what that looks like and what your favorites are.
Ooh, the chunky purees. So yes. So this, you know, at this stage, you do want them to be able to get some of the chunky stuff in terms of like the development. You don't want to delay it too long. But this could be like a lentil puree. That's one of my favorites. So even it could even be like a lentil or a bean soup could be part of the mix there. Like I love a lentil red pepper and a coconut puree. Mm-hmm. That to me is definitely going to be one of my favorites. It could be something even like cottage cheese at this stage. Like that's pretty chunky. This could be a little bit more with doing some ground beef with some potato and spinach. That could work in the mix there. So it's really my advice with any of these. The whole goal is, in terms of ease with parents, is to be able to do one meal for everyone. And I know that's super hard. So if you're setting the tone, so if you're, say, doing some roast chicken, a potato and spinach as a meal, you can just puree that together so that your little one is eating the same thing. Mm-hmm. I find that makes it so much easier in terms of your shopping for one. Yeah. You start to set the tone of like the family meals. We're all getting into the habit of we're all eating the same thing.
Right.
So you're not, I mean, and that gets a little easier as around like the 10 months and on, because the baby can start to really eat a lot more different foods and they should start to be able to pick up some whole foods too at this stage.
Yeah. Okay.
Like some of like the roasted chicken, beef stew, ground meat, meatloaf. Those are all things that you can start to do at this age.
Okay.
And yourself.
Yeah. Cause I think the next phase is like kind of at that 10 month and up mark is when you can start those finger foods and like getting, you know, a little bit more substance and variety there.
Yeah. And at this stage, you know, your child ideally is eating 3 meals a day. So you're really forming that structure around mealtime.
I started doing like smoothies with my kids around like a year old. And one of the biggest reasons, honestly, was just because they are a little bit pickier. So it was a way for me to get some of those vegetables in or some protein in. And I know people have different philosophies on like hiding food for your kids. But for me, like that's just what works, because otherwise I have extreme guilt that they're not getting what they need. So talk to us a little bit about the difference between a smoothie and a puree. And when is the best time to introduce that?
Smoothies are fantastic. So as soon as your little one is comfortable with a sipping out of a cup or with a straw, then you can start to do, you can do smoothies whenever you can. So certainly by 10 months, definitely. Essentially, smoothies are a puree.
Yeah.
And you can make them in different textures.
Yeah, different consistency.
Like, super thick, almost like smoothie bowls that your little one can eat with a spoon, or more that they can take sips of. Kids love smoothies. I think it's a great way to get in a huge assortment of nutrition. I'm definitely not against it, because also like such a great way to have your little one help you too.
Yeah.
Putting all the ingredients in the blender and, you know, sometimes they might take bites as they're putting it in to the blender, and that's cool. And they can see what goes in it. So even if it is green, it's not necessarily hiding it. They're getting used to eating some green food.
Yep. Yep.
It's, which is perfectly fine. You can start cup skills like really early, like 6 to 8 months. Just have them try and start to take sips from a cup. Yep. So they, as I said, like the smoothies can be started early. Some kids can do it at 8 months, and it's a great way to get in a lot of variety of nutrition and different tastes.
Awesome. All right. So let's talk a little bit about if you are traveling or if, you know, you just simply have made a decision not to make foods. Talk to us a little bit about what we should be looking out for in brands. Do you have any recommendations for those out there that, you know, maybe just simply can't do it and travel a lot? Because I know for me, like when we would travel, like I'd run into the grocery store and get the organic baby food, you know, because we're staying in hotels. Yep. So what's your hack for that?
As I was mentioning before, it's amazing that there are so many great companies now that are providing more organic baby food and more of interesting flavors that are incorporating more of the herbs and spices. I am a nutrition advisor for a wonderful company called Little Spoon. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
So they're direct to consumer online. They give you a roadmap too of like the health and nutrition of your baby. And, you know, they progress obviously as your child progresses in the age. Both my kids have loved it. You keep it in the freezer. You can definitely take it with you on the go. You can travel with it. So I'm a big fan of Little Spoon, and the flavors just really, and they're really smart about it. It's the flavors are fantastic, and they're, you know, they're concerned about making sure that you have appropriate nutrition. So Little Spoon is a great one. So they don't do pouches. You know, there's pros and cons with the pouches. Obviously they're easy and kids like to do it. If we just do it too much, though, the kids developmentally don't learn to like eat with a spoon. And that's something that we want to do. But for traveling purposes, Jennifer Gardner's brand.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's right at the tip of my tongue.
Once Upon a Farm. Upon a Farm.
Woo. And Target sells those, I want to say, too.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's in the refrigerated section, which is pretty cool because obviously it's more fresh when it's in the refrigerated section. But it will last for like a day of traveling and to keep in your hotel room and things of that nature. So you could definitely take a bunch of them. You can even travel with a little cooler for the Once Upon a Farm or the Little Spoons to keep in your hotels. And then I've been amazed. It depends where you go, but like obviously you can pick various things up at like farmers markets. There's a lot of like independent baby food brands that you can do. But you can also pick up unsweetened applesauce. You can also pick up yogurt. You can also pick up avocado and smash that if your baby is older and doing some nut butters. So there's also some, or bring like the Justin's nut butter packets that you could easily just like put on a cracker, put on a banana, or again, you can mash up a banana. So there's all this like real food that you can do when you're traveling that you can keep in your hotel room as well.
Awesome. Well, I know we have to wrap up here soon. So if you could just give us, you know, maybe one piece of advice or any other big myth or misconceptions that you often get asked about to clear up, let's kind of wrap it up there.
There's two. I would say getting in enough protein. And protein is, I would stress out less about it. I mean, obviously we want to keep our babies just like we want to keep adults' blood sugar stable, but it's pretty easy for babies to meet their protein needs. So with the simplest form of saying like nut butters, some eggs, some yogurt, kids love yogurt. And obviously as they get older, like a little bit of some beans, some hummus, like these are all ways that's like very easy to get a little protein in every meal. And you could add some hemp hearts, which are one of my favorite ways to add a little protein into like a puree on top of it or into a cereal. So I wouldn't worry that so much about it. I think a big importance should still be on getting those good fats in. Some people, some pediatricians, you know, who as the baby gets two, they said turn to low fat milk or low fat products, which I disagree on. I think kids of all ages and adults should be eating food in their full fat form. So that is one thing that I would still encourage. It does really help brain development and it helps with keeping the blood sugar stable as well. So avocados, ghee, butters, oils, all this stuff is wonderful for the brain development for the baby. I would also just look a little bit also at their gut health is really important because I did mention all the A's, like the allergies and the asthma and the ADHD. So if your baby was born with like a C-section or you or your baby were put on antibiotics,
Yep.
At an early stage, I do recommend adding some form of probiotic, and you can get it in the powdered form for your little ones. Mm-hmm. And you could mix it with some breast milk or some formula yep. for them to get it in, because a lot of the stuff that we're seeing has to do with some sort of leaky gut damage. So we just want to populate their system with as much good gut bacteria as possible. Some little kids, which seems gross for adults, but if you get fermented vegetables, and like the liquid part of the fermented vegetables are really strong probiotics as well. That is something that you could also give them with a spoon is really good. So the gut health and the probiotics, I think, are important. Just as we are focused on them for adults, I think they should be focused on for the kids, as well as making sure they're getting the healthy fats. And then vitamin D as we're getting into fall and winter season. These are just some like more nutrition tips, mm-hmm. but most kids, just like most adults, depending on obviously where you live, need a little help with the vitamin D. And there's, again, lots of drops that you could get on the market that you could just do a dropper or two for the kids. But it's a good way just to build up their immune system with focusing on making sure that they have their vitamin D and their good gut health, the probiotics. And not to say they won't get sick, just the goal is that they're going to be able to recover quicker and then the symptoms won't be as strong. So yeah. I feel focusing on some of these additional supplements for the kids is important. How about you can have a conversation with your pediatrician definitely about it. And then the other thing is do the best that you can. I mean, I know feeding kids can be so fun, but it can be so frustrating. And I'm a working mom with two little ones. So I think sometimes meal planning for the whole family can even drive me nuts. And I do this for a living. So I often say, like, you know, let not the perfect be the enemy of the good. And if there's nights that you have to do pizza and chicken nuggets just to get through, it's absolutely fine. And again, we want to raise the nutrition is obviously so important, but we want our kids to have a healthy relationship with food.
Right.
Yep. And that's first and foremost. So I say take stress away from the dinner table. If your child isn't eating something, don't force them. Don't panic. Just smile and say, if you don't want to eat this right now, that's fine. It's going to be here on your plate, but you don't have to eat it. If you want to come back to it, you can always come back to it. No arguing at the table, no force feeding. You know, kids are just going to rebel more if you try and do that. Trying to stay away from one last bite. When they're done, let them be the judge of it. I know with toddlers, it gets hard because they're so distracted that they want to stop eating and move around and play. So that can become challenging. But what I do with my kids, we set a timer. So even if we start with 2 minutes, the goal is for them to sit in their chair for 2 minutes. And then maybe we can get to 5 minutes. And that becomes a big win there as well. Just to loop back to the behaviors, there's another company that I just love and I have to give a shout out to. I have no affiliation with them, but it's called the Veggie Buzz Club. Have you heard of it?
I haven't, no.
Okay. I love them. So it's a weekly delivery and they also have some online stuff of a box for a monthly, I should say, sorry, not a weekly, of a fresh produce. So for example, if it's cauliflower, I don't know, or broccoli, there's always a book. There's always some like a seed to plant something.
Okay.
There's always a few recipes. There's always a few coloring kits and projects. So it really gets kids involved in food in a fun way and gets them excited about it, which is very cool. The whole goal is we also want to talk about food, not at the dinner table, away from the dinner table. So to read a book about a food, talk about planting, this all like piques kids' interest in food and gets them to learn about it in a fun way and not in a stressful way. So I feel like they do a really wonderful job with it. I know my kids have both loved getting their boxes to play with. And then again, just being mindful about our language, we can definitely talk about foods, you know, giving us energy and being, you know, good for making us run faster and things like that. But we don't need to say like too much sugar is bad for you or you're not getting enough of X, Y, Z because
creating those restrictions, right?
Yeah, you don't want to create a restriction. I've seen too many adults in my office have those restrictions put on them as a youth. And I think for each family to find that balance can be really tough. But what I can just say is if we can create just a non-stressful eating environment, which can often be hard, but I feel like that's just going to create so much ease later on for the family.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been so informative for me. I know for our guests, it will be as well. If they want to hear more from you, where can they find you?
You can always go to my website, middleburgnutrition.com. And on Instagram, I have two accounts. I have a personal account. It's S Middleburg RD, and that's MIDDLEBERG_RD, or at Middleburg Nutrition.
We'll make sure to link all that stuff in the show notes so people can just get right to them.
Wonderful.
Awesome. Well, thanks again so much for joining us on Coffee and Kettlebells. And guys, thanks for listening today, and we'll talk to y'all later. Thank you so much for sipping on a cup of coffee and kettlebells with me today. To find a recap of today's show, be sure to check out the Burn Bootcamp blog. To get your daily dose, be sure to like our Facebook page at Coffee and Kettlebells and follow me on Instagram at morgan.a.klein. If you have any questions you'd like answered at the end of my next podcast or have any suggestions for guests that you'd like to see featured on the show, please reach out to me at coffeeandkettlebells@burnbootcamp.com. If you love this episode of the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a review on the iTunes store, and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks again, and I hope you join me next time for a refill of coffee and kettlebells.